The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
And finally, Show and BK back on the Chiefs. It's Friday. You're getting your fix on the Chiefs, and I love it. Normally, I am the one that is fired up. By the way, Serta punked out, went on vacation or something. He's probably paying, he probably playing out of the wazoo for some gym membership that he's not using, and having a blast somewhere. But normally, it is me who is fired up off his ass about something. But this week, BK is filling his inner show on a topic that you just want to die. Why don't you even think Justin Houston is an option?
Okay, so let's start at the beginning here. Justin Houston on Instagram, the place where all rumors go to begin, of course, posted a picture with the caption, "Note to self," with the emoji for the note. Shut up and work. Nobody cares. There was also a report earlier today from ESPN that Justin Houston, I love these reports, these are my favorite, has multiple offers to play, but has not decided where he wants to play yet. Because, of course, it's 100 degrees outside. You've been out there, Ron. I've been out there. It's miserable right now. And you know what veterans hate? Training camp in the heat. So what's Justin Houston going to do? I don't know if he's got offers or not for real, but maybe he does. I'll take him at his word. He's going to go ahead and skip the first week or two of training camp because the first week or two of training camp sucks. It is miserable.
First off, I don't like the feel like you're calling Justin a liar. Like, you don't think Justin has these multiple offers? I feel like you're calling Justin a liar the way you're doing this. I think that's a little rude.
Maybe he's got multiple teams that are interested in him.
He's not got no offers, though. Maybe some teams have reached out, but the offers feel a little strong.
Felt a little aggressive that they came out with the report, multiple offers already, which, whatever, fine. It is what it is. So then, of course, the secondary portion of it. In the photos, he's wearing a Chiefs helmet. So clearly this means he wants to come back to Kansas City.
Well, they didn't have a Colts one. They didn't let him keep his Colts one. By the way, he looks good.
Well, yeah, he's always looked like he's in unbelievable shape. He's a specimen.
He looks shredded. Now I can't see his knees, but he looks, body-wise, he looks like he's ready to go.
The problem was never Justin Houston is not a physical specimen. That was never once an issue for Justin Houston. The problem was he didn't really want to play. Like I remember in 2017 and 2018, Chiefs fans were done. Just done with Justin Houston. And you know what he did those 2 years, Ron? He posted 9.5 sacks and 9 sacks for the Chiefs.
It was a real ugly 9.5, though. It was a sack. Like, it was one of those you look up at the end of the year and you said, really? Really? You don't remember many of them. He did have a big one in the playoff game against the Colts, so I'll give him that. But it wasn't an explosive 9.5 sacks. That's the biggest thing for me with Justin is that, man, he looked like he's getting workman sacks. Push you, push you, push you, workman sacks.
Okay, so you weren't really thrilled about the 18 and a half sacks you got the final 2 years of Justin Houston and KC.
I'm not saying I wasn't thrilled. It just didn't feel like 18 and a half. I mean, you know what I mean? It just...
So now that he had 19 sacks over the last 2 years for Indianapolis, and he's 32 years old, everybody's like, oh, yeah, Justin Houston, let's go. That's the answer to all the Chiefs. No. He's older. He's slower. He's not as good. He ain't going to be the answer to the Chiefs' issues. Justin Houston, if you're asking a question that ends with Justin Houston as the answer, you're asking the wrong question. Justin Houston, could he be your fourth defensive end? Sure. But the Chiefs tried to...
Who's ahead of him? If he's on this team, if he's on the roster right now at defensive end, who's ahead of him?
Well, Frank Clark for one, Chris Jones for two, and then probably Taco Charlton, honestly.
And then he's after Taco?
Yeah.
Okay.
As a pass rusher for me.
Not Dana?
Now, well, Dana's probably a better run defender at this point in his career. I just don't know what Justin Houston's role is on this team. Like, what is he coming in to do?
I want to make it very clear to our audience and our listeners. Brandon texts this to me. This is becoming a thing on Justin Houston, and it is one of the dumbest ideas I've seen. That's how strong he is.
And here's why. I should maybe align with this part.
Yeah, please.
You know why the Chiefs decided to get rid of Justin Houston in 2018? Because they needed to change the culture. They said this. They needed to change the culture on the defense. And it started with Justin Houston and the old guard that had enabled everything on the Chiefs' defensive side of the ball from basically 2016 to 2018. It got so bad that they said, we got to start over. They get rid of Justin Houston. They end up getting rid of Dee Ford. They bring in Frank Clark. They bring in Tyrann Mathieu. That is the new guard on this Chiefs defense. They are going to lead the way for us. And they have. Like, for all of the warts that you can say, and I'm with you, Ron, about Frank Clark and all of the things that have gone wrong with his tenure in Kansas City, there's also been, in terms of the culture on the field and inside of that locker room, it has changed. There is a lot more accountability on the defensive side of the ball. Some of that's Frank Clark. A lot of it is Steve Spagnuolo. A lot of it is Tyrann Mathieu. But that room, that locker room, is better than it was 3 years ago. Bringing in a guy like Justin Houston, who has established relationships with some of those guys, who has been a leader for the majority of his career in one way or another, that doesn't bring you in the right direction. That kicks you back to where you once were. I don't think that's helpful in any way possible. You don't need him right now. You don't need to go out there to sign him. I get why Chiefs fans are excited by this, because Justin Houston, you look at the stat sheet and you're like, oh, he's had 9 sacks each of the last 2 years. That'd be nice. No, it wouldn't. You didn't like it when it was in KC the first time. You're going to like it even less the second time around. He doesn't have a role for this team. He doesn't help your culture on this team. This is not the answer to the Chiefs' potential depth issues at defensive end.
All right. See, I'm trying to talk myself through this, and I'm gonna punk out here. I'm not going to lie. You know, normally, especially in our business, you know, you got to take, right? You don't really hop on a fence. Well, I can't lie to you, man. I'm struggling with this one. Like, when you sent to me the dumbest thing that I've seen, like, I really had to think about it, because BK's not normally this strong. Like, I mean, this was strong in his disdain for the idea, the idea to even fix your thoughts and lips.
I just had Bob Sutton flashbacks in my mind, and I was like, man, that's what Chiefs fans want? Like, we're excited about this?
You did not have to say that name. Okay, I've finally gotten over that name. But I'm thinking through it, and see, I'm talking myself through, and that's why I had you tell me where he would be on this group. And I think a lot of people get the – first off, there is some nostalgia feel with 50.
Yeah, all of the great feelings that come back when – what great feelings?
The great feelings.
The great moments.
He was a good pass rusher. He was he had a great season or two. He was a good pass rusher.
Justin Houston was a tremendous pass rusher. If I ask you your favorite Justin Houston moment in Kansas City, because I remember doing this segment in KC when I was there, there aren't a whole lot of them. Justin Houston, awesome Chief. Not a whole lot of moments.
Yeah, but he had a nice sack and a turnover in the Colts game in the playoffs. I mean, he had some moments. I can still remember him raising his shirt and hitting the 29 on his shirt when he would get sacks for Eric Berry. And maybe that's an Eric Berry moment. But I think there are people who still remember Justin Houston, still remember the big sack seasons, him and Tom as a combination. So I think there's a part of it there. And then what you just did, when I said, well, where would he line up? Man, when you get down to Frank Clark and then you're getting down to an experiment, and I feel good about the experiment because of the type of player he is in Chris Jones, but it's still a bit of an unknown on how he's going to be on the outside. And then after you get the two deep, who's a natural defensive tackle, you get to two deep, then you get to Taco Charlton. That's what gets to people where they're like, whew. You didn't even say Alex Okafor. And I know BK watches and understands this. He didn't even say Alex Okafor when he got to the three deep. And it's like, it feels like you're short. It feels like one of the most important things, which is rushing the passer, especially from the outside, and that being a position to do it, you feel like you're short, especially with Steve Spagnuolo's defenses, which are really looked at the front four getting pressure. And when you get me to Taco Charlton as the first guy potentially off the bench, hell, I'm nervous. And it makes me wonder about 50. Now, I'm with you. I don't know if Justin has two ACLs. I'm going to tell you that right now. If you're asking me to be honestly, after they butchered that, I don't know if he has two working ACLs. His explosion absolutely dipped on him in Kansas City, and it has to be gone when he was with the Colts. So that makes me concerned. It feels like, is there a younger guy that can give you what he's going to give you? But I think the fear factor and the part that gets me to stop me to get to the dumbest thing to close the book on it is, now you're looking at Taco Charlton potentially being the first guy off the bench, or Alex Okafor, who's not a pass rusher, and Dana and stuff like that. That's where it is a should at least be a give it a look.
I think the Chiefs chose their current defensive ends already over Justin Houston. Because, like, let's roster-wise, right? Let's look at this logistically. How many defensive ends are you keeping this year? Because you're not keeping six of them, probably five.
Yeah.
Frank Clark, Mike Dana, Alex Okafor for sure are going to be on this team. I'd be very surprised if they cut Damone Harris or Joshua Kando. Kando's their fourth-round pick this year. He's not the kid you like.
He's the kid you really like.
He's the one that has a little bit of promise. That's five. And then if you want to count Chris Jones in that group, Chris Jones would be included as well. Who are you kicking out that you're giving up on both for the here and now and for the future to be able to sign Justin Houston? The answer is probably Alex Okafor. And they just signed Alex Okafor when they could have also signed Justin Houston if they wanted to go that route. So whether we want it or not, I think the Chiefs have already made their decision on this. So maybe
you don't think it's even at least a look. Or a thought, because
could if one it of those was, kids, I think it already the, happened.
Could one of those kids go to the practice squad?
I don't know enough about the rules, how it's going to be structured this year to know one way or the other. But given how they played last year, I'd be stunned if the Chiefs could even sneak them through waivers. Like Damone Harris or Mike Dana, those would be the two guys that are most likely to slip through.
Harris, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they would be able to slip him through. I think both of those guys would be picked up by somebody.
Yeah, I think at least Brett, Andy, and their staff, maybe at least, and I think also, obviously, Spags has a big voice in this, at least sit down and give it a look, because we'll see. Hopefully, you know, young guys get there and you get Frank for a lot of the season, but it just does feel like they're light at that position. And it's one thing, and we've had conversations, for them to feel light at corner, because that's not how the defense has generally been predicated and used under Spags. But the two areas, safety and defensive line, seem to be the hallmarks of what Spags likes to do, and it just feels a little light up front. That's why I can't get with all the way over where you are, even on badass knees, Justin Houston.
So if they're light at defensive end, they're every bit as light at right tackle right now, because the Chiefs' revamped offensive line looks very different at left tackle, at left guard, at center, at right guard. It looks pretty similar at right tackle compared to what it was a year ago. That's the only place where they've got a returning starter right now. And for as frustrated as I was about the Justin Houston story that's developed over the last 12, 24 hours, I think Ron the Show Hughley is even more frustrated by Mike Rimmers starting right now at right tackle.
Let me tell you something. Now, we've sat here and we've had conversations about, hey, maybe they went overboard with how they overaddressed what lost them the Super Bowl, right? What lost them the Super Bowl is they had their two tackles out and they could not block from the outside. Hell, they had Wiley had to move out to tackle, so they had a new guard. Like, they struggled. And they said, I'll be damned, that ain't happening again. We're not getting stuck without any offensive linemen. Not only are we going to get new and capable starters that we think are improvements, we're going to get backups too. We're going to have it all. And they've done it in the draft. They've gone in trades every way possible. I will be damned if they've done all of that and put all those resources on the offensive line for us to walk in the door and Mike Rimmers is a swing tackle, is starting at right tackle. Absolutely not. I'm looking at it. I'm like, oh, okay. They got Orlando Brown out there and left tackle. Okay. They got old Thuney out there, the big pay, high pay guard. That's right. Okay. Creed Humphrey liked that in the draft. Kind of felt that. Okay. Mr. Smith, I know you are really, really high on Smith out of Tennessee. A guy I know out here, he used to play for the Chiefs, offensive lineman, 12-year vet, Wade Smith, said that dude's going to be a Pro Bowler. Okay, I'm with it. And then Mike Rimmers, you don't bring back a soul who started in that Super Bowl, but the person you're going to bring back on the offensive line is Mike Rimmers? Come on now. Listen, what happened to the young guy? What's his name?
Lucas Niang?
Yes, Lucas. What happened to him? That big joker? That felt like that was it. What are we doing here? I can't. Mike, no, they can't do this. They can't walk into this season with Patrick Mahomes, who's running from his life, with Mike Rimmers at right tackle. Stop it. They got to fix that. I'm just going to take that as, hey, we're giving him looks. Somebody ain't quite ready yet, but Mike Rimmers can't be the dude.
So we would agree that Lewis Riddick of ESPN is pretty plugged in with the Chiefs, right?
He's in love with them, yes. Anything he says, he got straight from the source.
Yeah, he worked with Andy before. He's a guy that is invested in the Chiefs. Well, he tweeted earlier today, quote, "The Chiefs believe that Trey Smith has unique ability." All right, I like that. "They love Joe Tooney, as they should. They love Humphrey, as they should. They have full belief in Orlando Brown and his adjustment to their system. And here's the kicker. Here's the kicker.
No choice.
And they just need Rimmers to be competent." Like, the praise was coming in from all angles. Trey Smith, unique ability, love Tooney, love Humphrey, full belief in Orlando Brown. Rimmers, just be competent out there. I think that tells you everything you need to know, Ron. And here's why I am not worried about this yet.
Oh, okay.
The reason why I'm not worried about this yet is twofold. One, they've still got Lucas Niang if anything were to go wrong. Two, I don't think this is a plan for the full year. I think Kyle Long's going to be a starter on this offensive line.
But he's a guard, right? Like,
he can play tackle. He's played tackle before. I think Kyle Long's going to be your starting right tackle before the end of the season. I think what you're going to see is Creed Humphrey he's already established himself. He's going to start at center this year for you. Trey Smith is going to start at right guard for you this year. If there was any question about that, he wouldn't have been taking the first reps in training camp. That is very unique in an Andy Reid training camp. You don't see that very often where rookies are taking the first rep. So Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, they're going to be starters for you. Go ahead and write that in stone. You know your left tackle, left guard, center, and right guard already.
And I'm fine with it.
Absolutely. I don't think they want to start a rookie at center, right guard, and right tackle, which is what they'd do if Lucas Niang was out there. So I think that's part of what goes into this decision and why Mike Rimmers is out there. Kyle Long's on the PUP. When he gets back, I think he's going to work himself into the starting rotation, and that's when you'll see him take over for Mike Rimmers. But for now, I actually agree with Lewis Riddick. All you need, and Remmers did this at times last year, all you need is for Mike Remmers to be competent at right tackle. This is why you re-signed him. He's an insurance plan. And for now, that you're trying to maintain that insurance plan. You're trying to pull from it.
I was good for the insurance plan. The insurance plan generally means a backup, like a backup plan to me. This, the insurance plan has become the plan. And that's where I'm having concern with. If you're going to go, we're going to draft guards. We're going to sign Kyle Long. We're going to sign all these cats. Mike Remmers, I get what you're saying, center, guard, tackle, rookies. But look, you're in a special situation where you got parts around you and coaching around you that can help you get acclimated and push you through to where the middle part of the season where you feel like, all right, this group is ready. Like, you got some parts here. I think getting Lucas Nguyen action and getting him in there is a better move. The ceiling is so much higher with him. Like, he's so much higher. And
he hasn't played football in 2 years, though. And that's another part of this, because he was hurt his final year at TCU and then last year opted out of the season. I do think it tells you a little something about Lucas Nguyen, and maybe we should tamp down a little bit of the excitement about him. Not completely eliminate, but tamp down some of the excitement by the fact that he hasn't been able to overtake Mike Remmers.
Now, if he's not ready to go, that's one thing. If you feel like he's going to hurt you, you know, he's not ready to go, okay. But I'm just hoping this is just early training camp thing where we're not just going to give this to you. You got to earn it. But give me the higher ceiling guy. Please, man, give me the guy where – because, I mean, that big monster, you can do stuff with. He can move. Like Mike Remmers, man, Mike Remmers is out here just holding on to God's unchanging hand. Every snap, the nerves come through. Every snap, like I'm – like, when they play the Denver Broncos, that's the side that Von Miller predominantly lines up on. I'm sweating bullets. They're never moving them off. So I just feel like with all – like, that's my thing is BK, with all the resources that you used in the offseason, my God, Mike Remmers can't be the answer at right tackle when that was the reason. And also, Kyle Long, I don't know, man. Are you – I mean, that was a – I didn't think about that, but that's – like, you're okay there with Kyle Long, who's obviously his best position has been guard, playing right tackle?
Yeah, I think he'd be fine out there. He's played there in the past. He's been pretty good at it. Is it his best position? Maybe not, but I think you suddenly become a very good run-blocking offensive line with him out there at right tackle – and a pretty darn good pass blocking line as well. So I feel good about that. I just think you need to get there. And I don't know how long it's going to be, no pun intended, before he returns. Even if it is, let's say it's 4 weeks into the regular season. I think you're fine, man. I really do. I think Mike Remmers showed me enough last year to believe that when he's at right tackle, when he's at left tackle in the Super Bowl against the best defensive line in football, and you're not giving him any help to be able to try to overcome it, and you've got a bunch of backups next to him, yeah, that ain't going to go well. But when you've got good players next to him, he's at right tackle instead of left tackle, you can give a little help that way because your other guys you feel good about on their individual matchups, I think you'll be able to get by. Now, to speak out of both sides of my mouth a little bit here, the first 4 weeks of the season, when it comes to the pass rushers that you're going up against, is not easy. You got in week one, Cleveland. My guess would be there's no reason for Myles Garrett to line up on the Chiefs' left side of the offensive line a single time in that game.
I watched him last year play against the Texans. He never lined up on Laramie Tunsil's side ever.
No just reason to. We talked about this with Chris Jones, right? Hunting matchups. Well, that's the matchup that if you're the opposing team, you're going to be hunting going up against the Chiefs. So that's going to be tough. Baltimore, they find a way with their blitzes to get home, even though they don't have a great pass rusher. The Chargers, well, you got a Bosa that you got to deal with. That ain't going to be easy as long as he's healthy. Philly's got some interior guys that can be problematic. And then finally, at that point,
and Barnett on the outside and Graham, those are two good defensive ends that can rush the quarterback.
It's not going to be easy. They're going to have to do this as a unit, but I think Mike Remmers is good enough to get you by as long as you need him to while Kyle Long's out.
I don't want to make it seem like I'm thinking like you can't win with this. Like, I think you can find a way to win with this. I mean, I watch the other Bosa, Nick, just absolutely destroy Eric Fisher in the Super Bowl play after play, and they found a way with what they could do. And Andy can hide, and as a former offensive line coach, does a great job of protecting and hiding and running different schemes and techniques to hide issues on the offensive line. My thing is just – it seemed like that was the big point of emphasis on in the offseason, and to come back with Remmers as the answer, that one feels like, well, what the hell was all the moving and shaking for if we're right back here with Mike Remmers? Like, how do we go from Mitchell Schwartz to Mike Remmers? Like, that's just my thing. All right, hold on, we've got to address this. And this is real time, folks.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I'm not going to say this is dumb, like you said earlier about the Justin Houston thing, but you just spoke about Louis Riddick. And I'm looking at Louis Riddick right now, and this thing, I've tried to ignore it. I really have. I've seen Nate Taylor lose his mind about this. I've seen Pete Sweeney, who, of course, will get gassed up into anything. And Arrowhead Pride has talked about this. But Louis Riddick coming out of the woodworks himself. Noah Gray, tight end. Don't forget that name. He's going to be fire emoji. And then he has the audacity as a – who's supposed to be a very partial guy who calls Monday Night Football games hashtag Chiefs Kingdom, coming from Louis Riddick, to finish this off. What are we doing? I refuse to acknowledge the nickname that keeps getting rolled out from him, some stallion bull crap. But I
think it's the white horse on the beach.
The white horse on the beach. Yeah. I saw then he's the white stallion is what I also saw. Let's calm down.
Do you like baby Kelsey better? Cause that's what Pete Sweeney's going with.
Shove it, Pete. He's still white. He's white pony right now. Okay. Let's calm down on the Noah. Let's just take a step back on the Noah Gray love fest here. Just
don't like his 4.640.
Listen.
His sub 7.3 cone.
Let's back off. Look, with the stallion, baby Kelsey. Let's let him in first. All right. I'm not holding against him that he went to Duke. Let's just fall back just a bit. Now, if I'm honest, I think Noah Gray will be productive, and you could argue he could be. You could see him being the best second tight end they've had behind Kelsey since, you know, I don't know.
Demetrius Harris, probably.
Yeah. And, Mr. I'll make tough catches, but those ones where I'm standing alone, 50% chance. But because who's throwing to him? Who's on the field out here with him? I mean, he's not going to be a guy that people really look to stop. And you know the play caller, the best play designer in the game, with two tight end sets, will probably find ways to have openings for him where he can be productive. So I do think he can be legit productive, but let's slow down with the baby Kelsey and the white stallion. Let white pony just live.
So here's a question for you. This. Who finishes the year with more receiving yards?
Mecole Hardman.
No. I'm not going that high up the list.
It's just my natural reaction.
Is it going to be Noah Gray or whoever your fourth favorite wide receiver is? So Byron Pringle would be one of the options. Cornell Powell, Jody Fortson, Marcus Kemp. I saw earlier today, it looked like Antonio Callaway was getting some run with the first team. Whoever your guy is out of that group, not named McColl, DeMarcus, Tyreek Hill, who finishes with more yards this year? That guy on the receiver core or Noah Gray?
It could be Noah, because I do think they're going to be heavy to their top two targets, and then which is Kelce and Tyreek Hill. And then, as I've said, I believe in McColl Hardman, obviously the only person that has any kind of connection with Kansas City. I'm the only one who believes in McColl Hardman, obviously. And I think DeMarcus Harris will – DeMarcus Harris, the hell did I call him, Dan?
But you got him confused with Demetrius. I get it.
Demetrius, yeah. But I think he'll do what he's done. And then obviously
yards.
Yeah. And I do think something we talked about, and I agree with you. I do think Clyde is going to have a bigger role receiving. So I could see that being Gray. I could see that being Gray. Like, I'm just not a believer in Byron Pringle, just a solid special teams cat. And Sean Kemp, I don't think he's going to be heavily involved. Old Rayman over there, I don't think he's going to be heavily involved. I know your name is Marcus, but I just want to call you Sean. That's just how I feel. So I like him, but come on, man. Like, can we back up a little bit on this kid?
I don't know. I like it. I think I'm in on it.
I know you are.
I think I'm in on it. Now the baby Kelce thing, let's reel that in a little bit. If you want to call him a white horse on a beach, I'm down. I can get the white stallion. I can get behind both of those.
See, I can't get behind the stallion.
Comparing him to Kelce, though, it kind of reminds me a little bit of when we were doing the baby badger thing with Juan Thornhill and Tyrann Mathieu. Okay, let's not compare them to all pros. We don't need to be doing that. But if you want to get excited about a guy who ran a 4.640 at the NFL Combine, who ran a sub-7.3 cone, which was in the 90th percentile for his position. Yeah, I can get behind that. This guy's super athletic. He moves in a way that really no other Chiefs tight end, like you said, since Demetrius Harris has. And honestly, he's second more fluid. Tight end, fair. He's more fluid than Demetrius Harris was. Like, he can turn left and right. Demetrius Harris is more of just a straight line guy. He's kind of important as a football player.
Except that man can't turn left and right.
I mean, neither can DK Metcalf, and it hasn't been a problem for him so far. If you're going to be able to get a guy that is a legit threat as a number two tight end, all of the questions that I've had about that Chiefs number two wide receiver, number three wide receiver, they become a little less important. Yeah. Like, if you could get a big year out of Noah Gray where he catches, I don't know, 35 passes for 400 plus yards, which would be a good year, but not some sort of like blowing records out or anything like that.
But that starts to add up when you think of what Clyde could get and what you think about.
It takes pressure off of DeMarcus Robinson and Byron Pringle and those guys. And that's really what you need.
I'm good with him. I'm really intrigued to see how they use him. Like the one thing that really jumps to me when I listen to Lewis, because he's obviously going over the top, and we know Lewis Riddick, right? Lewis Riddick is a guy that is locked in. This isn't just him waking up. You know what? I saw Noah Gray run a couple of routes. I like him. I think I'll be. No, it's a what's the word I want to use? A kind of a known evaluation. This is a with knowledge assessment. This is not just an assessment or opinion, but an educated opinion, because he's if you hear something with Lewis Riddick and the Chiefs, he's probably gotten some sort of inside thought. So when I hear that at least makes me believe that Andy potentially views him as somebody that he would want to use. Because sometimes we can talk about like who could be a good second option or another option in the offense. But when I hear Lewis Riddick say his name, you're just talking about a fifth round tight end. then that to me makes me believe he got it from somebody, which means, hey, look out for this cat because he may be involved in some things. He may be involved in, hey, we feel like we can get something out of two tight end sets and do something with him and Kelce together. So when I hear that, it does rain off the bells to me that they view him as somebody they want to use if they are putting his name out there.
Yeah, and sometimes it's less important about who's good, who's bad, and more important about who the coaching staff thinks is good and bad, because those are the guys that are going to see the field. And if they believe in him, if they think he's got a bright future, kind of like the thing we're talking about with Lucas Niang, if they think he's a year away, it doesn't much matter if we think on the outside looking in, he should be the one that's playing. That's where he's going to get the playing time, or the lack thereof for Niang. On this one, if you got Noah Gray and the coaching staff, and I agree with you, when you see something like this from this specific source, man, that is sourced material. That is coming from the Chiefs. He's not just randomly hyping up a fifth round rookie out of Duke. That's not something that you're going to see from a guy at ESPN who's got a lot better things to do, a lot more stuff to do important with his time. He's hearing that from somebody. So they saw something at camp today where they were excited.
Yeah, I would look out to see like that. You know, Andy loves to add different wrinkles, and they haven't done a ton with two tight end sets to really use it as weapons. That could be something as a new wrinkle this year. And when you got Tyreek and when you got Kelce out there and you got the best quarterback and play designer design in place and throwing the ball to you, I think Noah Gray, the white pony, has a chance to be productive. So let's let him do some stuff before we get him stallion. See, I'm just trying to give kids stuff. Just let him do some stuff before he's a stallion. All right, we got to get to it. The game that is sweeping the nation. Everybody, every week who listens to Show and BK on the Chiefs, love to hear this. It is imposter or certified. This week, I'm going to throw this one at you, BK. Safety. Juan Thornhill. Is he an imposter or is he certified? I think I will lean towards certified, but I need him to take a step. I think it's time for him to take a step, and I need him to go from a guy with heavy flashes to a guy that's right there. I'm going to give him a bit of a pass coming off the ACL. Maybe it takes him some while last year. But like when they got Tyrann Mathieu, like I looked and envisioned him. Ooh, this looks like this could be a poor man's version of Troy Polamalu and Ryan Clark together. A guy like Tyrann Mathieu, you just jack of all trades, which you do a lot of stuff with. He's at the line of scrimmage a ton. And when I say poor man's, because Troy Polamalu is a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's something special. So that's why I say poor man's group of those two. And Ryan Clark was just a great tandem with him, who could cover on the back end and was aggressive. Like, I'd like to get to a point where Juan Thornhill is itching towards that and more consistent. So I'd say right now I will lean towards certified, but it feels like this is a year where he should take a step.
I'm with you. I think he's going to be certified. I think after year one, or midway through year one, really, before the ACL injury, I was confident he was certified. I thought he was really coming into his own in 2019. He looked like one of the better players on that defense. He was quick to the ball in the running game. He was making legit plays in the passing game. He was playing deep in a way that completely changed the way they were able to utilize Tyrann Mathieu.
Yes. And that's the big deal. That's the big deal with him, is he has to allow you to be able to use Tyrann as a playmaker. Right. And that's what he's got to do.
He opens everything up. He opens the playbook up for Steve Spagnuolo. They needed a guy like Juan Thornhill to be able to utilize Tyrann Mathieu, to be able to utilize their corners the way they want to. Like it just opens things up. Him playing deep also allows you to blitz a little bit more. Like it's a better situation for your defense. Last year, he wasn't the same guy. He looked a little better towards the end of the season. And Ron, I thought it was really insightful. I thought you could take a little bit away from Juan Thornhill showing up to training camp early. He showed up with the rookies and the quarterbacks. because the other group that can come at that point in time is the injured players. And he said after that first training camp practice, when he was there with the rookies and quarterbacks, he said, listen, I wanted to make sure I'm good. Because last year, he said he was at like 70, 80, 85%. He never felt fully confident in his knee. And I've heard this before. I remember Tyrann Mathieu has spoken about this. In fact, a lot of guys say it's 18 months or more before you're really back to 100% and feeling confident both mentally and physically. Tyrann Mathieu has said that. And if you're looking for 18 months, we're right there now from the time when Tyrann Mathieu, or excuse me, when Juan Thornhill had that injury. So I expect big things from him this year. I think if we had this same conversation this time next year, there wouldn't even be a second of thought for us. I think we're going to believe that he's 100% certified. But for now, just coming off of what was a weird year for Juan Thornhill, which was injury riddled, I'm going to say I'm leaning towards certified, but I need to see it from him this year like you.
Yeah, he's got to take a step. And this is the time. And he's got the talent and he's got it. But what makes him big is, as you said, he unlocks your ability to use, I think, your biggest playmaker on the defensive side of the ball, Tyrann Mathieu, and put him in situations where he is a playmaker. All right, before we jump out of here, we got to get in some of these camp battles early. There's a couple out there. You already talked about it. So you think this is a done deal. You feel like Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith, they're going to be starters here. And what, you don't think the Canadian doctor is a guy there that could play, that may get a shot as a starter, as a veteran?
Man, if he was going to, I think he would already be up there. I think that's one of those things where sometimes you'll see this in camp. Sometimes you'll see it in weeks like 1 through 4, where there will be a little deference to the veteran. So they'll give LDT or whoever the veteran is at that specific position, they'll give them the first chance. And they'll say, all right, this young guy, he's got to be able to win it. He's got to win this job from you. The fact that they gave Trey Smith the first snaps, they gave him the first opportunity at right guard, told me everything I needed to know. I would be, barring some sort of injury, and knock on wood, hopefully that won't be the case, barring something of a setback from Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith, both of them I fully expect to be starting on your offensive line this year. And I think that's best case scenario for the Chiefs, because you now have potentially 4 years where you'll have Joe Tooney, Creed Humphrey, and Trey Smith as your interior offensive line. And hopefully you'll be able to re-sign Orlando Brown Jr. after the season. And now you've got 4 of your 5 spots where you're set up, not just for the now, but for the future as well.
And Mike Remmers, which is rough. Where else? What else interests you in these camp battles?
Yeah, I wanted to get your thoughts on this because I know of the two of us, you're probably the one that's a little bit more concerned about the cornerback spot. So right now in camp, they've got reportedly Charkandrick West and Legarius Sneed on the outside and their base packages. That's what we all expect. The question was, okay, who's going to be lining up outside and inside when you go to the nickel? So far, based on everything I've seen, it's been Legarius Sneed kicking inside to the slot, which is kind of what I expected in that nickel. And you've had a combination of Mike Hughes and DeAndre Baker going to the outside in that spot with the number one unit. So Sneed inside, combination of Hughes and Baker on the outside. What do you think about that? Does it surprise you at all that that's the construction that they're going with?
I don't know if it surprises me. It's hard to see where else they could go.
Does it make you want Xavier and Howard that much more?
You and Serta have specifically taken that away from me. You've stopped my want to dream. And so I've given up on that. I gave up on Xavier Howard when you guys crushed my dreams, which is really one of the most selfish things I've ever seen people do. So I won't even think about it. I've exited that out of my mind.
You don't want to give him $20 million a year now? You're good?
Hey, it ain't my money. I want, you're asking me what do I feel like they need help? And to me, see, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. It just gets yourself thinking what could be. And no, Sneed has to, in my opinion, in these situations, he has to damn near be able to cover without help. Like somebody has to, because Like, you could see, okay, teams, especially with good offense, hell, you ain't got a good offensive coordinator is, oh, I can do this. I could put out this formation and get Hughes or Baker on the outside potentially with guys. Well, let me just keep doing that, especially if they're not going to have their best corner, which at this point looks like Snead, chase someone. He's just going to go to the slot. Well, let me keep doing this. There is some concern there that your best corner is being put in a slot and potentially may not be going up against the other teams. Now, I feel like Spags would adjust and not do what Bob Sutton would do for years and just have Marcus Peters covering fullbacks because whoever runs out to the and right.
Justin Houston covering Antonio Brown, yes, with the game on the line against the Pittsburgh Steelers in the postseason. That definitely didn't happen, though.
Yeah, we're not moving. Whoever comes out to the right, that's who they guard. And whoever goes out to the left, that's who they guard. But there is a concern there with Hughes or Baker going to the outside. There's a bit of a concern there, but if Snead can be a guy that can do it, can get a lot of coverage without help, that could be a big thing. I don't know. I thought Fenton was all right in the slot. And
I thought that was my biggest takeaway here is I'm a little surprised Fenton didn't immediately get the opportunities outside. I know that they've used him in the past in the nickel. I love L'Jarius Sneed in the slot. I think that dude is the perfect guy for that position because of how versatile he is. We saw it last year. He's a really good blitzer, man. And if you can get him a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage, a little closer to the end of the line, that's where I want him. I want them to be able to use him in every possible way. And with the way that teams are utilizing their best receivers now from the slot, like where do the Chiefs put Tyreek Hill when they want to get him open? They put him in the slot. The same thing's true about a lot of other teams around the league now. They're putting their best guys there. So you're going to see him lined up against the best option a lot of the time when he's out there in the slot. I like him there. I thought they would go with the guy that has shown in the past to be good in this system and Rashad Fenton as the starter initially in camp. It did surprise me a bit that they leaned immediately to Mike Hughes and DeAndre Baker. I get it because those guys have the pedigree in the past, but I'm a little surprised by it.
Do you think that is a lean towards more the fact of they think Snead can be so good in the slot that they'd rather make him have the move in the slot than have someone on the outside? Because that to me, it seems like that's where they would rather have their best guy.
I think Fenton actually kind of profiles better outside. I don't think he's great with carrying speed up the middle. And the two-way go is tough for him. So what that means, like the receiver is in the slot, they can go either out or in with their route, to break it down into super layman's terms. On the outside, when you're on the top or the bottom of the numbers, you kind of have one way that you can go there typically, unless you're going on a go route. You're not going to run an out from the bottom of the numbers. There's nowhere to go for you. So Rashad Fenton out there has less ground to cover. And I think he's better in that situation. So that's why I would have been interested to see what he looks like out there. I don't think the Chiefs view him that way, though, for better or worse. I think
they view him in the slot.
Yeah. So I think they view him directly as the backup to L'Jarius Sneed in the slot, and that's his role on this team, and that's perfectly fine. They're going with the pedigree of a former first-round pick and Mike Hughes and a guy that was selected really high and DeAndre Baker before the weird stuff off the field happened for him. I get it. I'm fascinated to see what those guys look like because both of them have had a lot of struggles in their past. Hughes is here in Kansas City for a reason. DeAndre Baker wasn't great in his limited experience in New York. They're going to have to play really well for this team to be good this year.
Yeah, Mike Zimmer's not usually just giving up good corners in Minnesota. And so we'll see. We'll see how Spag uses them to coach him up. But that'll be an interesting thought. By the way, I'm here in Houston. And the circus that's happening with Deshaun Watson, Chiefs fans, it is a circus out of this world. But it is something that you should keep your eye on because it feels like now trade possibilities with Deshaun Watson feel like it could happen more before the season than I ever thought at this time. And if that happens, rest assured, the Denver Broncos and Las Vegas Raiders, I don't know they're going to land him. I do think Philadelphia and Miami in particular, would have the landing spots first. But they will throw up their best offers, the Raiders and the Broncos. So that's one to keep an eye on, especially with Rodgers going back, going back to Green Bay and that fiasco. Denver and the Raiders, I would not be shocked if that's where Deshaun Watson ends up. Deshaun has a no-trade clause, which I don't know why he would invoke, but he has a no-trade clause, and we know for a fact Kareem Jackson's former teammate in Denver has come out and says, Deshaun wants to be here. We've talked. Get me there. So that fiasco that's happening that I'm covering every day in Houston, Chiefs fans, be looking out, because if there is an offer to be made, the Raiders and Broncos will make offers. Just don't know if they'll pull it off.
I think Tom Brady completely changed the game with what happened last year. It was about to happen this offseason, and it didn't, because the NFL is a little different than the NBA. If the NFL was the NBA, Aaron Rodgers would have changed teams this offseason. I think we would have seen Russell Wilson traded. We definitely would have already seen Deshaun Watson traded, barring the off-field stuff. That obviously
he'd have been traded if he didn't have the potential creepazoid issue going on.
There's that as well. So it would have been a fundamental shift in the NFL if this was the NBA. I think we're a year away from it. If things don't end with Seattle having an unbelievable season, potentially winning the Super Bowl, it wouldn't surprise me if this time next year we're talking about Russell Wilson in a new uniform. I fully anticipate at this time next year we're going to be talking about Aaron Rodgers in a new uniform. Both of those guys, if Deshaun Watson isn't traded to this division, will be candidates to come to either the Broncos or the Raiders. Those teams have set themselves up, whether it be via market for Las Vegas or situation for Denver, to be a perfect suitor for whoever the next quarterback is that wants out.
Yeah, when Denver set the hell with Justin Fields in that draft, that was a big shining light. So pay attention to that. Keep that up. The Deshaun move could happen any moment. And I would expect that Denver and the Raiders would at least make some kind of call on it. So keep your eyes and ears open for that. BK, always fun. Serta, we'll see you next week. Enjoy yourself on your vacation or whatever it is that you're doing. I don't even think he's on vacation. I honestly think he's somewhere sitting in his house laughing, saying, I got out this week. I got out of it this week. I'm about to eat me some sushi and make me some homemade spicy mayo, because I don't think they gave me any. But I'm about to get out and have me a good time. BK, always fun as well. See you next week. We'll talk to you next week. Show with BK. We are out.